Let's go ahead and kick this meeting off. We'll call this meeting to order. Pledge of Allegiance, Vice Chair Stephanie, would you do us the honor?
Absolutely. Please rise, either salute if you're a veteran or place your hand across your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with justice for all.
All right, thank you for that. Council roll call, please.
Vladimir Anderson. He's still muted. Vladimir Anderson. I see him there. I know he's experiencing difficulties with the microphone. So Eric Duane.
Present.
Alexis Federico.
Present.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Present.
Alex Maslin.
Present.
Robert McDonald.
Here.
Mario Munoz. Marcos Villa. And Stephanie Wade.
Present.
And we do have quorum, Chair.
Can you guys hear me?
Vladimir, I think the important thing is, can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear.
All right, guys, and Charlie, we'll go ahead and move on. As long as you can hear us, that's the most important thing. Go ahead and move on.
You remind me of one of my lieutenants. All transmit, no receive.
Oh. We won't belabor that point any longer. Let's go ahead.
I am here.
Item four, public comment. At this time, is there any public comment?
We did not receive any public comment prior to the meeting, and there are members of the public present. If there's any member of the public that would like to address the board, please use the hand raise icon or press star 9 and I will unmute you. And I see no hands, Chair.
Very well. Moving to item number 5, action items. We were just having a humorous discussion about AB 361, so I will just call for a vote. The matter is having meetings on Zoom, so we'll have a roll call vote if you're in favor or against having meetings in Zoom. Please, roll call vote.
Vladimir Anderson. Eric Duane.
Yes.
Alexis Federico.
Yes.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Yes.
Alex Maslin.
Yes.
Robert McDonald.
Yes.
Mario Munoz. Marcos Villa. And Stephanie Wade.
Aye.
And that is majority, Chair.
Very well, thank you. We'll move on to item 2 under action item 5, approval letter of AB 1595 Veterans Cemetery. Hopefully you've all had time to review it. Has everyone had time to review it? So just give you a little bit of background. Obviously we were approached by Valor. So thank you for that. And we know who on this board sits in Valor too. So thank you for this. I'm moving this forward. And this is just a letter that is something that is gonna go out to our representatives, supervisors, and so forth, giving additional support officially from this body. Stephanie?
I just had one question. It seemed to me that Senator Umberg was not on the CC list. We've got Senator Archuleta, but I think Senator Umberg would also be somebody that might benefit from seeing the communication. But I'd sort of defer to Bobby on that.
I'm just for okaying the program. I mean, you know, if I didn't see it that it went didn't go to Umberg or anything. I think I don't know where. I mean, if you want to put Umberg's name on it, that's fine. But basically this was for to back up the program that the supervisors had. So if it needs to be added, add it.
So then we can entertain a motion to approve with that amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any additional discussion? All right, let's call for the vote.
Vladimir Anderson. Eric Dwayne.
Hi.
Vlad Anderson in favor.
Alexis Federico.
Aye.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Aye.
Alex Maslin.
Aye.
Robert McDonald.
Yes.
Mario Munoz. Marcos Villa. Stephanie Wade.
Aye.
And that is majority.
Thank you very much. Go ahead and move into item III. I almost feel like it's a fiesta under item five. This is the approval letter recommendation of Board of Supervisors regarding the Welcome Home event for post 9/11 veterans. I'll turn it over to Alex Maslin, but before that happens, I would like to say that again, a very hearty thank you to the folks who did the heavy lifting on this. This is a Herculean effort. So just my personal thank you. This is a fantastic event. So looking forward to seeing this come to fruition. I'll go ahead and turn over the floor to Council Member Alex Maslin.
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, a big thank you to Stephanie, especially along with everyone else. She definitely did the heavy lifting on this. So hopefully everybody's had a chance to review it or look it over. And before we move on to, I guess, voting on it, I would ask if anybody has any additions, subtractions, anything they want to add, or any comments on it as it stands now.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve this.
I'll second that motion. I just wanted to give anyone an opportunity if they thought there should be anything else added to it.
We have a motion first and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All right, let's go ahead and have a roll call vote, please.
Vladimir Anderson.
Vlad Anderson, aye.
Eric Dwayne.
Eric Dwayne, aye.
Alexis Federico.
Aye.
Alexander Gonzalez.
Aye.
Alex Maslin.
Aye.
Robert McDonald.
Aye.
Mario Munoz. Marcos Villa. Stephanie Wade.
Aye.
And that is majority.
Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move into item six. We've got, where did our guest go? We had a guest, Walt Dannenberg. Is he still here?
He is.
All right. We yield the floor to Walt Dannenberg. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for inviting me to present today to your group. And just let me know if you can see my screen. I'm going to try to go full screen here. Are you able to make that out?
Yes.
All right, great. And so I wanted to present to you a few things. And just, I know there is a great interest in COVID and what's happening around our local area and information regarding testing and vaccination. Be happy to provide those updates. And then there's also a large discussion across the VA nationally with regards to the asset and infrastructure review process. And Secretary McDonough has directed us to present this information whenever we have the opportunity during this week to present to external bodies regarding how this process is going to impact the VA Long Beach healthcare system here specifically. And then I also received some discussion points and areas of interest that you might be find of interest, of course. And then I'll open it up for any question and answers following. So just kind of getting into the information about the VA Long Beach healthcare system. So we typically serve Southern Los Angeles County and Orange County as our primary catchment area. We service last year, FY21, about 68,000 different veteran uniques. And looking at our COVID-specific information, I know many of you have had the opportunity to receive vaccinations either in the community or here at the VA Long Beach Healthcare System. And our current vaccination center is located in building 164, which is the primary care building, on the second floor in room 228. And I provided a link in this presentation. And Stephanie, I can send you this the PowerPoint so that everyone can access the links following today's presentation. And it's a nice map of the facility and all the different buildings and where the different areas are located. So you may be more familiar with the egg that was previously our vaccination area, but given the recent decline in COVID activity and vaccination numbers, we've moved that to the primary care clinic building. And then hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And the question often comes up, you know, there's this flu season, time to get your flu shots as well. And if you're an enrolled veteran, you can get both your flu shot and your vaccination or booster during that same visit. The eligibility for COVID vaccination and boosters is a little bit more expanded. And you can be an enrolled veteran for the vaccination of COVID-19, or you can be a veteran or a caregiver or family member of a veteran to receive a COVID vaccination through VA. Also, for those of you that are interested in testing, if you have COVID-like symptoms, we have updated our process for getting it. You no longer have to even come into the facility. You can just have access testing through drive-through services that are available here for our enrolled veterans. That's going to be located in front of Building 165, which we lovingly call the Egg. That's our large conference center. And the hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I believe they're also open on Saturday. So I will double check, but Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I think there are some limited hours on Saturday, and I will work to confirm that. And then also, you may not know this, there is a process to obtain free at-home testing kits. And by going to www.covidtests.gov, and you can order test kits and they'll be mailed to you at home, and you don't even have to come out of your home to get tested. So that's a wonderful available resource that's available to anyone. Also, with a little bit more guidance on the drive-through testing, if you do have COVID-19 symptoms, you can just drive on up and we'll take care of you. If you're not experiencing any COVID-19 symptoms, we definitely want to plan for your visit. So please go ahead and call our call center at 562-826-5151 and schedule an appointment. And again, that's if you're asymptomatic or don't have any symptoms. And the call center operates Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Now, if you have COVID-like symptoms and you're sick and you're seeking medical attention in addition to getting tested, there's no need to try to go through the drive-through process. Just go ahead and show up directly to our emergency department and we'll go ahead and take care of you. Also, we have some questions with regards to what is our visitation status. And when we're at the peak of the Omicron surge, we have a three-tiered system, and we were previously in the red status, which was no visitation, only for veterans seeking care. And then we've since relaxed that to the yellow status, which is restricted visitation, meaning that you can have a caregiver assist the veteran to their appointments and limited visitation. We are hoping to relax to eventually get to green status where there's no more restrictions on visitation. We're not quite there yet, but the indications are that it is looking to have improved numbers across COVID in Southern California. So in the coming weeks, we're hopefully going to be able to return to a green status, but more to come on that. And then also, since we are a healthcare facility, masking will still be required when you visit the VA healthcare system. So while you're inside, we ask that you cover both your nose and mouth securely with a face covering, and that mask has to be of surgical grade or higher. So if you have a cloth mask or a bandana or a gaiter or even a mask that has a valve on it, those are not to standard for infection control purposes. And we ask that you wear a surgical mask. And if you don't have one, we'll gladly provide one to you upon entry to the facility. Other updates or resources that might be of interest to you and how to stay connected with what's happening at the VA Long Beach Healthcare System. That first link is our main internet website. And so you can always access that and find out more information about us and the services that we provide. And then something that may be new to you and you have not yet heard of is what we call the VIP experience. And this is a relatively new educational platform that allows for custom videos and thousands of videos to access with regards to the different types of services and looking to complement the healthcare that we provide to our veterans and their experience. So I'm sure many of you have sought care at a facility, whether it's the VA or not, and sometimes you're sick or you have an issue that you're needing to have attention paid to. And going into a healthcare facility is not the most relaxing experience. And when we kind of think about that process and going through it, you have just a few limited moments or minutes with your nurse or your provider or the care team. And there's a lot of information that's exchanged during that brief period. And you often leave thinking, well, I should have asked this question, or maybe you didn't even really hear what was being asked of you. And you kind of leave thinking that there was so much more information that you wished you would have retained during that visit. And so the VIP experience allows you to either on your own self-select videos of interest to you. There's a really nice one about welcoming about the services we provide here at the VA, but then there's also, again, thousands of other ones with different services that we provide. But the idea behind this is your healthcare provider, your care team can prescribe directly to you videos that pertain to the type of treatment that you're seeking or a procedure that you may be having in the near future. And this allows you, along with your family member or your caretaker, to watch the video with you. You can watch it anytime. It's accessible 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can stop it, replay it, write down your questions so that when you go back or you go to your appointment with your care provider, you kind of already have a list of questions. You understand kind of the procedures, or if you don't, you can write down those questions and ask those questions during your appointment. And that makes for a much more fruitful and engaging experience for both the veteran and also being more well-informed about the care that's being provided to you or that will be provided to you. The other thing that we keep updated quite often is our VA Long Beach Facebook page and the current happenings and events and scheduled activities that we have here. So that's a great resource as well. And also My Healthy Vet. So we have this virtual platform that allows us to stay connected with our veterans. Veterans can read their lab results and medical records and have some limited scheduling capability. And so that's been a great resource. So if you don't have a My Healthy Vet account, I highly encourage it. It allows you to stay much more connected and be able to securely message your care team as well. And then obviously, if you're not feeling well and you would like to call a nurse and kind of seek treatment via the telephone, I've listed the nurse advice line there. And that's 1-877-252-4866. So kind of getting into the mandated reports for the VA across the country. So again, Secretary McDonough has asked us to present whenever we're speaking to external groups for the course of this week and up till March 14th. And looking at the asset and infrastructure review that is currently taking place across the VA healthcare system. And one of the things that the VA has noticed and through the Mission Act, the requirement was to look at the aged infrastructure. Many of the VA facilities are built in the 1940s or 1950s or even earlier. And we need to meet the changing needs of our veterans. The veteran population has evolved over time and we need to evolve with it. And also, as you can imagine, technology, artificial intelligence, you name it, healthcare is constantly evolving itself. And VA needs to operate in this rapidly changing environment. And so this asset and infrastructure review was a way for VA to systematically go through and look at our infrastructure and our business operations and to make recommendations on how VA needs to change to be able to treat future generations of our veterans. So just a little bit of history about the asset infrastructure review. So this was spawned from the Mission Act, where it required the asset and infrastructure review process to take place. And this is an in-depth study of the current and future needs of our veterans and to evaluate VA's healthcare infrastructure and ensure that VA is ready to, again, serve and provide world-class care for our veterans today and into the future. This process was designated to modernize and realign VA's aging healthcare infrastructure, and the recommendations may include relocating some VA facilities, maybe building VA facilities where it doesn't currently exist, and for lowering areas where there may be less demand, looking at right-sizing the various organizations across the country, and again, having that for each facility, and we'll talk a little bit more about how that might impact the VA Long Beach healthcare system specifically, and locations within Orange County and Los Angeles County. So the idea was to build a healthcare network to provide the right facilities at the right place and provide the right level of care for our veterans, ensuring that we're leveraging and continuing to make sure that we're partnering with our federal academic and community providers And again, continuing to pursue world-class academic training affiliations and research partnerships. Some of you may know this already, but if you have a provider, whether they're in the VA or private sector, I think it's somewhere around 67 to 70% of all healthcare providers have at one point in their training received academic training through the VA healthcare system. So that's something that we're very proud of in training today's workforce and future healthcare workforce as well. Also, VA positions direct care systems on a sustainable path and making sure that these recommendations remain the primary focus and ensuring that we are a world-class provider and coordinator of veterans health cares in the future for generations to come. So kind of just level setting, on March 14th here in a few days, the VA and the Secretary will publish recommendations for the Air Commission. It's my understanding the Air Commission is actively in the process of being formulated by presidential appointments. And the Air Commission itself is a bipartisan, presidentially appointed and congressionally approved commission that will review VA's recommendations and determine whether or not they will be accepted. The recommendations with any changes made by the Air Commission will be provided to the president and then to Congress for approval. So following this release, a public release of information on March 14th, throughout the rest of the year, calendar year 22 and even into 23, the commission will hold additional public hearings, visit many VA facilities across the country, meet with community partners, and also listen to veterans for their feedback before they make their final recommendations. In the near term, these recommendations will not have a major impact. Any potential changes to the infrastructure of the VA healthcare system is years away, sometimes even 10 to 20 years away into the future. So how were the recommendations developed? They looked at the various types of data and looking at to see how our system, what that would look like best to meet the needs of our veterans for now and into future generations. So there was an extensive data validation process across all of VA. There are 150 medical centers located throughout the country and looking at the different domains and demographics. So you have geography, the current demand for services, supply, access, quality, and satisfaction scores. The facilities themselves, how well are they maintained and how new or old are they, the mission, and also taking into consideration the cost impacts of what these recommendations may be. And then also looking at the data and validating it with key VISN, which is a network level, regional level, and facility local leadership prior to and during the analysis itself. So interviews were conducted with the network offices and the local facility leadership teams across the country. That consisted of over 1,800 interviews and also working with staff at the central office and VISN as well as the local facilities. They also incorporated input from veterans and other stakeholders. There were over 50 public virtual listening sessions with stakeholders across the country as part of this data validation and data collection process. And there was an extensive review by VA leadership at the national level. So there were the network directors, undersecretaries for health prior to the review by the secretary. And again, draft recommendations were updated based on the feedback and information that was received during these reviews. So the criteria that was being used to make these recommendations, it's important that the Mission Act established for the VA to set a standard set of criteria for all of these recommendations to meet in order for them to become recommendations. And the criteria was looking at the demand, looking at the services that were needed by our veterans and the projections of where those services will be needed in the future, looking at access and ensuring that veterans have timely access to care, looking at the impact to the mission. So ensuring that the VA second, third, and fourth health-related statutory missions of education, research, and emergency preparedness are still maintained through the recommendations that are being made. And obviously quality is an important factor, ensuring that we're not degrading the quality of care and even looking to improve and making that a really great healthcare system for our veterans. Obviously, we want to ensure that cost effectiveness is being well-maintained and that we're not doing anything that doesn't financially make sense. And then obviously sustainability. We want to ensure that we have a sustainable healthcare system to serve our veterans today and well into the future. So here's kind of the edge of your seat. Here's what's being recommended for the VA Long Beach healthcare system. And I will share with you the market assessment itself, looking across the country. co-located us with the Greater Los Angeles Healthcare System. So some of the information is for the Greater Los Angeles market. Some of the information is more specific to what I will call the Southern Greater Los Angeles market, which is Southern LA County and Orange County. And I'll get into that just a little bit. So what you see on the screen now is the location of all the various outpatient clinics and medical centers. And our catchment area obviously is in that southern portion there on the screen. So looking at how the market assessment analyzed our catchment area. So we were specifically looking at Los Angeles County, Southern Los Angeles County and Orange County. For our Southern Greater Los Angeles market, we have one VAMC, which is the Tibor Rubin Medical Center. And they broke out our community-based outpatient clinics into two different categories. Two of them being what they call med services, which had specialty services outside of maybe just primary care and a few other specialty services. And those are located in Gardena and Santa Ana. And then we have our other four remaining community-based outpatient clinics in Anaheim, Laguna Hills, Santa Fe Springs, and Death Villages of Cabrillo. Now, the number of enrollees, you'll notice that they used FY 2019 data. So there has been significant change, especially with the pandemic, into the projection. So those are going to be some items for feedback and adjustments of these models as this moves forward. But they co-located all of our enrollees for 2019 with GLA, and that is 211,000 uniques, which puts us at the number three market in the country. And then the number of core uniques was listed at 121,000 and change. Now our projected enrollment growth, and again, this is without the inclusion of pandemic data where we've seen growth over FY20 and FY21, but they are projecting a decrease in veteran uniques by 13.3%. And they also looked at the rurality of the healthcare system. Now, being that we're in Southern California, our rurality is significantly less than the rest of the country at 6.9%, where the rest of the nation averaged around 28.8%. Now, looking at the demand of the healthcare system, so through their projections, it looks like our inpatient services for med-surg and mental health are projected to decrease med-surg by 22.5%. And mental health by 9.8%, again, from FY19 to FY29. The demand, however, for long-term care is projected to increase by 24.8%, and the demand for outpatient care services, such as primary care, mental health, specialty, dental, rehab services, that is projected to increase as well. So a little bit of decreasing projection in inpatient and increasing in outpatient services. They also looked at how close are veterans to the care that they receive, both looking at access to primary care and secondary specialty care. And the benchmark for VA is, you know, am I within 30 minutes of primary care or 60 minutes within specialty care? And for our healthcare system, 95% of our veterans reside within 30 minutes of a primary care location. And then within 60 minutes, 82.2% of our veterans are within that drive time. And both of those metrics are well beyond the national average of a lower percentage. Looking at our facility specifically for the VA Long Beach Healthcare System, they did note that we have several services in addition to just normal medical, surgical, and mental health. So we offer long-term care, spinal cord injury and disorders, blind rehabilitation, rehabilitation medicine, and then a cadre, a whole complement of outpatient services. They noted our average daily census for our inpatient units. So we typically run, we have 108 active inpatient medical surgical beds, 30 inpatient mental health beds, and 75 active community living center beds, and 102 for spinal cord injury, 24 for blind rehab, and 10 for rehabilitation medicine beds. And again, looking at our FY19 data, through this analysis, they looked at our average daily census, how much of those beds are we actively using on a regular basis, and we were at 75.4 for our med-surg, 26.3 for our mental health beds, 66 for our average daily census for a community living center, which is a nursing home type setting, and for spinal cord injury, we were at 75.1 beds, and then for our blind rehab center, we averaged 11.8 inpatients on a day-to-day basis, with our rehab medicine rounding is up at 8.7 patients per day. The infrastructure, so it's important to look at the age of our facility here at the Tibor Rubin Medical Center campus. And the facility itself, the campus was built at a naval hospital, but the bed tower, building 126, which is the tall building you see when you come to campus, was actually built in 1967. We do sit on 100.4 acres, so there is a rather nice size of land for us to work with, but all but 10 acres are already actively constructed on, and there's only 10 available acres for further development. They did note that the last major renovation took place in 1996, and that our facility conditions assessment, basically, if we were to say, okay, today we were going to commit funds to fix every outstanding facility item to have all the structures up to date and up to code, that would be about $138.7 million. And our annual operations and maintenance to maintain the facilities as they are exist today is around $23.1 million per year. So kind of the edge of your seat, which really is anticlimactic, but that's a good thing for us here in the southern greater Los Angeles market for Orange County and southern LA County. You notice at the bottom of the screen, there's the row that says current and the row that says future. They are all identical. So basically what that means is we anticipate, and the market's analysis shows that we are aptly equipped with the number of facilities and the locations that we have, and moving into the forward. So there's not going to be any recommendations as far as that we are aware of with either eliminating sites of care or downsizing. And they did make some minor recommendations, and that's where I'll draw your attention to the upper right-hand corner. So administrative realignment, there's not any recommendations that are going to be made. New sites, no further recommendations. But they did notice that if you look at our Santa Ana clinic, there's kind of disconnectedness. So we have the large CBOC itself, and then kind of across the parking lot, you have the what we call the annex location. And then several miles down the road, we have another location for the West Santa Ana, or the referral center that we have there, and resource center. And so their recommendation is that we find a location in Santa Ana and grow and consolidate all of our Santa Ana locations into one site. So that's something that we definitely support and will be working on into the future. They also recommended that we have a Gardena clinic that's located in southern Los Angeles County that is currently run via contract, and transitioning that to a VA staffed clinic into the future. And then modernizing and right-sizing our inpatient beds to, my goal is to get to single occupancy patient rooms so that we're not sharing rooms. I know if you've looked at some of our inpatient units, many of them are four patient rooms, and we have projects and future plans to develop additional projects to get to a healthcare system where we have a bed tower that is full of a complement of single patient rooms, which will help with not only just privacy and sense of mind, but also noise levels, you name it. There's a lot of benefits to be had with having single occupancy and single patient rooms. So the future state of this market assessment and the Air Commission is to create a system that's more accessible for care for our veterans, ensuring that it's modern, safe, and well-placed. We have well-placed facilities throughout the country, and strengthening the partnerships with high-quality providers. And again, ensuring that we have a strong emphasis on outpatient care and delivering care where the veterans are, and working to continue to improve our collaborations, and then also ensuring that major facility renovations where needed do occur in the coming years. So just kind of a summary of the AIR review process is the veterans are and always will be at the center of the VA healthcare services. These recommendations are being made to ensure VA provides the best and most up-to-date care to today's veterans and future generations. And again, it's all about the physical infrastructure and ensuring that we actively invest in not only our workforce and the physical infrastructure itself to ensure the viability of VA's future and being a healthcare leader well into many years to come. And just thanking you for each what you do each and every day in support of our veterans. I know you guys cover quite a bit of business and really have veterans at heart, and really appreciate all that you do for our veterans of Orange County. Now, I did receive a few items of interest, and I wanted to touch base on these items specifically, and then we'll get into the question and answers if there are other topics that you would be interested in knowing about. I'd be happy to answer those questions. So there was a question with regards to services for our LGBTQ plus veterans, and we do have two champions and points of contact, Danielle Daniels and Matthew Rogers, and I have their contact information at the bottom of the screen. And just wanted to make note that our goal is to ensure that veterans who identify as LGBTQ+, choose VA and receive affirming care to achieve optimal health and overall well-being. And again, we have those two designated coordinators, again, focusing on providing education, strengthening both internal support services and community partnerships for both VA staff and veterans who identify as LGBTQ+. And then also some services and treatments provided to our LGBTQ+ veterans, our ongoing sexual health testing and screening, HIV prevention care, help with discharge status and upgrades, counseling for issues related to gender identity and or gender therapy, speech therapy, hormone replacement therapy and adjustment counseling, and then coordination of gay pride activities and other community referrals as well. There was also a question about women's health and kind of what's happening across the healthcare system here specifically, and how are we looking to support our women health initiatives. And I will say, if you look at the growth of different segments of different types of veterans and the various demographics that we monitor, women veterans is our fastest growing segment of our veteran population. And there is a national cultural change effort, and here how we're supporting that locally. We have a biannual women public forums, and we're initiating our first public forum, which will be our Women Veterans Town Hall, and that is scheduled for March 23rd. So there should be some additional information coming out on our Facebook page and other mass email communications. So highly encourage our women veterans to attend. And our quarterly, we also have quarterly focus groups. We just held our third one on March 1st, and we'll talk a little bit about both of those in a second. And then we have evidence-based quality improvement projects. So if there are topics or discussions or opportunities that come out of those forums, there is a process to cycle that into our own improvement efforts here at the Long Beach VA healthcare system. And then I don't know if you've had the opportunity to see it here on site, but we do have a cultural change signage display that's at our famous intersection that we call Hollywood and Vine. And it's a nice display. And then also I Am Not Invisible campaign display, which is now permanently affixed in front of building 126 by our women's health department. So more a little bit about the Women Veterans Town Hall. So this is the forum where we discuss women's health programs, discuss cultural change. We share enrollment and eligibility information, talk about well women information as well, and then provide mammogram updates and provide information about women's mental health issues, services, and that is also inclusive of MST, which is military sexual trauma. The focus groups are a little bit more private, so it's a smaller group, usually about six or maybe even less, and really getting into connecting with our veterans on an individual basis and talking about subjects such as harassment and how to make VA more welcoming. I've had the opportunity to engage with several of our women veterans, and it's unfortunate the experience that they receive, either whether it be VA staff or fellow veterans that are coming into the site to receive care. So there is a lot of opportunity and a lot of work to be done to ensure that VA is welcoming for all of our veterans. And then obviously having open discussion topics and other items of interest that may come up during those focus groups. You will be pleased to know that we did, through this initiative called the Women's Health Staffing Innovative Enhancements, prioritization, that we have now pursued receiving full-time additional resources, and that includes having a maternity care coordinator, which is currently on staff, a women's health care coordination. That position is on staff, and we have one that we're onboarding for right now for mammography care coordination. So really adding to the resources and the staff here to support our women veteran and the care that they receive here. There was also an inquiry into community care, and obviously our mission here at the VA Long Beach Healthcare System is to become that number one healthcare system in the country, and we do ultimately prefer that our veterans choose to receive care here at the Tibor Rubin Medical Center, or one of our sites, as we truly believe that we offer the best care anywhere. Now, with that being said, for those who are eligible and prefer to go outside and receive their care in the community, the process does begin by seeing an in-house provider who will forward a consult to the community care, and then the community care team works with the veteran to get their care scheduled in the community with the community care provider. Community Care sent over 14,000 referrals to our community providers in FY21 last fiscal year. And the next slide kind of looks at the progression of this over the course of the last 5 years or so. So the gray bars, if you will, signify FY17, 18, and 19. And you can kind of see an upward trend. And that trend has continued to grow for FY20 and 21. And then FY22, obviously, we're just a few months into that. So that's why that number is significantly lower, because that's just year to date. But we are continuing to not only grow our services internally, but we're also seeing a growth in the services out in the community and through our community care program as well. So the top categories for care in the community where we're outsourcing the most types of care, and that includes physical medicine, rehab, whether it be chiropractic or acupuncture and massage therapy. And then also we're seeing a lot of homemaker home health aides for individuals who need additional assistance at home for their average daily living skills. And then also for mental health, dental, unauthorized emergency care, podiatry, and skilled home care are the top categories that we're sending out and currently seeing referrals for community care. There was another question that kind of talked about the psychologist staff, and I think there might've been a misconception that we only have one psychologist for the entire VA Long Beach healthcare system. And just would like to share that we have a large mental health team, both of psychiatrists and psychologists, and psychologists specifically, we have around 45 that are currently on staff throughout the VA Long Beach healthcare system. About 34 of those are located here at the main Tibor Rubin Medical Center, and then 11 are located throughout our CBOCs in our catchment area. There was also some interest in post 9/11 veteran data and kind of concerning about the risks and suicide and having that be a major concern, which for this specific age population, but also for all of our veterans. And there was, I guess, an inquiry into how well can we drill down into that information. And there doesn't appear to be readily information available through to your committee or your council with Orange County specific data. And when we ran this by our own mental health team, they said, you're absolutely right. We only have access to state national level data by age group. And so that is something that I think there's an opportunity to work with Orange County Health on to see if there's a way for us to continue to maybe find county level data that we can use to help improve and partner to improve our services and healthcare. I did include a link to the annual report from the Office of Mental Health and Suicide Prevention, but again, that data is only by state and national level and by age group. It doesn't break it down by county, but just want to provide that as a resource. Suicide prevention efforts with county health agencies is something that we continue to do. I know we have an annual forum, if not multiple, with Orange County specifically, and we continue to work on improving work with them to improve county level data collection and analysis, and then community engagement events as well. For our healthcare system specifically, we want to ensure that we're continuing to focus on our screening process and assessments and safety planning and outreach. Mental health is a number one suicide prevention, number one clinical priority for VA. And that is something that we are dedicated and committed to working on now and into the future. You may also be interested in that we have a thriving vocational rehab program for vets with serious mental health issues and illness, and ensuring that we are able to provide them with a rehab program and give them meaningful work as they work to recover. And then I'll stop there and see if there may be some other questions or other topics that I could be available to assist in answering.
Thank you for that presentation, and we'll open the floor up now to any questions.
Director Dannenberg, thank you for coming today and for presenting all that great information. It was a very insightful presentation. I really appreciate it. I really particularly enjoyed the updates you gave about COVID, especially as we transition to a more endemic approach across the nation. I really found that information to be helpful. One thing I did wanted to share with you is that I myself went through the drive-through back in January, and I was met with some resistance from staff to get tested for COVID-19, even though I had symptoms, and I wanted to ensure that, you know, I was getting proper medical care for that. When they tried to get me to, or when they tried me to kind of steer me away from the testing, they also suggested that I go to a pharmacy to purchase my own antigen test to get tested that way. I found that just particularly concerning because I would have thought that the VA has the infrastructure in place to support veterans that are trying to get tested. And so I kind of just wanted to make sure that policy was still consistent across the board, and was wondering how veterans are serviced there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that experience and apologize for that scenario taking place. I wasn't aware that that had happened. So thank you for sharing that with me. And we are currently testing whether you're asymptomatic or symptomatic. As long as you're enrolled a veteran with our healthcare system, we should be able to take care of you and not be referring you back to a pharmacy or anywhere else. We should be able to care for you on site.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Director Danberg. I appreciate that. And then really excited to hear about the developments in the infrastructure changes here for the Southern California region, particularly in LA and OC. And I'm excited to hear how the VA is going to consolidate here in Orange County. So please let us know if any of us can help in that endeavor.
All right, will do. Thank you.
I'd like to jump in real quick to say, Mr. Danberg, thank you very kindly, sir, for being here today. And again, thanks for the update for the programs, but also that neat update that you gave for community care. Thank you. I know the last time a group of us spoke to you about it, you were on it. So thank you very kindly for that. Really deeply appreciate it, sir. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you.
Go ahead and turn it over, Stephanie.
Oh, you're on mute, Stephanie.
Sorry about that. I think I'd know that by now. I just wanted to thank you so much for a really in-depth presentation. And I know all the questions that I had asked, you answered every one of them. And I really appreciate you giving us that much time. I have a question about one of the slides or one of the enrollee growth is negative 13.3% between fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 29. How does that compare to the national average? Because I mean, I assume demographically we have fewer veterans. So how does that work for the rest of the country? Do you happen to know?
Can you hear me, or am I on mute?
No, I hear you loud and clear, sir.
Okay, all right, great. Because I lost my screen to unmute. So that's a really good question. I through this review process, they did not share the information for national level. But I'll see if I can ask. There is a national group that I can reach out to, and I'll be happy to provide that information. What I can speak to is, if you look at the just population of veterans in World War II, or maybe going back to World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and as we get closer and closer to this day and age, the veteran population overall has shrunk to some degree. So my guess would be that it has decreased, but by what percent, I don't know, but I'll be happy to look into that and give that back to you.
Yeah, that's the apples to apples comparison. I think we need to know about what's happening with our veterans population versus, you know, the nation. So that would be sort of helpful for us beyond just what it says about the VA Long Beach. And then I wanted to frame something that, you know, I think Alex brought up in his concern, you know, for instance, you put up the great resource where people can order a rapid test through the federal government, but that's not through VA, and that's available to all Americans. And it's a very limited program. So for instance, if you live with several people, it's based on the address, you know. So if you live with several people at the same street number, you're only gonna get, I think it's two tests. Three, or is that three or four?
Four.
Okay, I can count. I'm a Marine. You know. But so yeah, I mean, and I think the way we were looking at this is essentially, since people with private insurance are mandated to get those tests on demand through and covered through their private insurers, it seems like veterans who are basically covered through the VA are getting less care And I don't think that's a decision at your level. I know that's, you know, how this was implemented, but that's why we were so concerned that it seemed like some of the staff at the testing center were looking for a reason not to give a veteran a test on demand. All the more reason that, you know, if you're physically coming in, we were hoping those tests would be given. And so that's why we raised that concern, I think. And I appreciate your point of view about that. And hopefully, you know, we can just make sure if we get another surge, that there is a really liberal policy and that they're, you know, really doing everything they can to get veterans that support. And then the last question I had is, it concerns a veteran who we helped, or where my office, working for a county supervisor, is trying to help. He's a 74-year-old veteran, and we're trying to get him into housing, which isn't your bailiwick. We're working on getting him a HUD-VASH voucher. He's connected, and he's working with BLOC. But the part that I would bring to your attention and ask maybe if there's some way we can just look into and make sure he's getting the best possible medical care is right now, this is a gentleman who, as I mentioned, is 74 years old. He was living in his car for 4 years. And right now he's at a, he's in a congregate shelter in Orange County. And that is not a safe place for this particular veteran. It's not a great place for anybody, but we know we can't fix everything. But this particular veteran, I don't have access to his health records, but I've met him and he literally, he has terrible short-term memory issues. And I know he's enrolled in VA healthcare and he has a VA primary at VA Long Beach. I'd just like to see if there's something we can do to redouble our effort, because this is a gentleman that I met him and was introduced to him and spoke to him for about 20 minutes with somebody he knew well and trusted. And I called him back about a half hour later to let him know that, you know, I had found resources for a hotel stay for him. He didn't remember who I was. So, I mean, this is somebody clearly that, like, I don't know if a HUD-VASH is the appropriate. He's very high functioning on a certain level and speaks well and, you know, physically can get around. But clearly there's some memory issues. And I'm worried that he's not getting the medical care for his cognitive issues, whatever they may be. Is there some way I could connect with your staff to try and double check on this veteran?
Yeah, so you can email me directly, or I know you've been in communication with Amy Cantor, either one of us would be happy to take that and appreciate you bringing that issue forward. Because if we have a veteran out there that's not quite right, needs additional services, we need to know about it and then connect with them. Yeah. So I
think maybe he's so functionally presenting that maybe his providers aren't aware of how bad it is, but maybe we can give him to take a second look.
Sure. No, I appreciate that, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you, Director.
Are there any further questions for Director Dannenberg? All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item. Director Dannenberg, heartfelt thank you for your presentation today. Obviously, you covered a comprehensive amount of information, so we're very grateful for you offering up your time and for you coming to us today, that presentation, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
All right, thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. So go ahead and move into item 7, Executive Committee Report. I threw something in the chat there for everyone to see on, this is AB, looking right at it on my computer, AB 1623. And so that's something that just came up on my radar today. And it's something that's important. I would advise folks get a look-see at that. It's presented by District 40's James C. Ramos. And it's talking about exempting military retirees, retiree pay from state income tax, as well as survivor benefits. So definitely a good idea. I think it's one way to garner more military retirees coming, getting them into California state. After they've finished their first career, they move on to their second career. And then I think that's the idea behind this, but it also benefits a number of retirees who are already living in the state. So please take a look at that. And then I have an announcement for Coffee Talk this month. Of course, it's Women's History Month. So of course, Coffee Talk is going to be talking about women in the military. So please join us on the fourth Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. There will be an invite that goes out for that. Love to have you join us, especially our women veterans that are sitting here on this council. If you can make it, that would be great. Share your stories. Obviously, Elena has to be there, so she will definitely be representing for everyone, but Look forward to some other folks coming to join us talking about women's contributions in military history. Last month we did African Americans in military history. It was pretty good. Obviously, we didn't have the expert on the matter, but I did my best, and we covered periods going from the Revolutionary War to current conflicts and had some great discussion about contributions, very significant in our nation's history. And so thanks for those who showed up to that. And I will turn over the remainder of my time to my vice chair, Stephanie Wood.
I don't really have anything for a report today. I mean, I've been really working on that. I think I will have a couple of things next month, some veterans-related announcements. But I just really appreciate all the support that I got from everybody working on that letter today and also on Eric's letter. It's great.
Thank you all for that. We'll go ahead and move into item 8, Elena Kim, Veterans Service Office.
Thank you, Chair Duane. Good afternoon, everyone. I have two updates for you today, one related to staffing and training. So last week, we had 4 veterans claims representatives who took their California Department of Veterans Affairs state accreditation exam, and all of our team members passed that exam. So we are very, very pleased with that. They're moving on to the next step in the process, which is pretty much a bit of paperwork on the VA side and a background check so that they could gain access to the VA's system, which is called VBMS, so they can really start to work more closely with veterans as they come into our office. The second update that I had was related to a very well attended workshop that we had last year, which we're having again this year. And that is the College Tuition Fee Waiver Online Workshop. Desiree threw it on the screen there, but we've got our flyer, which was just finalized right before this meeting. This year, we have included a QR code, which you can scan with your phone to register, or you can go to the link on the workshop. But it's coming up very soon on Thursday, March 31st, 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And we do encourage folks that are either students who are dependents of veterans or veterans themselves, or folks that work with students who might be interested in applying to this. We're going to have a really comprehensive workshop where we walk them through what the state requirements are to be eligible for this benefit, as well as how to submit their digital application on the Orange County's online college tuition fee waiver portal. So it'll be staff from the Orange County Veterans Service Office who are running this, and we look forward to hosting it, but I would ask that please share it with anybody that you think might benefit. And I will defer the remainder of my time to Erica, just in case I missed anything on my end. Thank you.
Not at all. I think you covered a great job, and I'll just give a kudos to Elena, because it was really her leadership that thought of the College Tuition Fee Waiver Workshop last year. And that was because we had a fairly new system, and there was a lot of churn in the online system of people that were submitting documents and then had some missing pieces. So then the application got denied, and then they didn't understand why it was denied. And so by spending the time up front to host a workshop and really educate the community on what's required and how to use that system, it really saves a lot of our staff time on the back end if we can get complete applications up front and initially. So I hope that it's well attended, and thank you for helping with outreach.
Well, fantastic. Thank you both. I'm looking forward to using that again as soon as we get that acceptance letter for grad school from my oldest. So looking forward to that very much. We'll go ahead and move into item 9, Cal Veteran Update. Ben Gales, good to see you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Just to quickly comment on that fee waiver workshop, I had a chance to attend last year, and it was fantastic. You know, Elena and staff really was a demonstration of the high level of knowledge of, you know, Elena and staff on a lot of really complicated, detailed issues that, you know, really help people when they're going through that process. So that's great that that's happening again. You know, for this month, I was thinking yesterday about how many great events there are related to veterans in Orange County this month. And so I just wanted to walk through a few of them and, you know, what I'm aware of in terms of what's happening with some of these events. So on March 15th, UC Irvine is hosting a Veteran Housing Summit. It's going to be attended by a good number of you know, significant stakeholders in the veteran housing space, and we'll be looking to develop a strategic plan to address veteran homelessness and housing for Orange County. On the 18th, Cal State Fullerton is hosting their 10th annual Women Veterans in Higher Education Conference. And I had a chance to look at their agenda, and it looks great. The usual stuff you'd expect at a conference with speakers and breakout sessions. And I also noticed they're providing childcare. And I love that addition, you know, really trying to make that a great event. On March 24th, the Region 8 Consortium of Colleges will be meeting. So if that's not familiar to you, Region 8 is Orange County and South LA's group for college veteran resource centers to get together. They're meeting on March 24th, and that group is doing a lot of great work right now, looking at some significant federal level issues around student veterans and issues like housing allowances in an online environment and how best, how those allowances should be made available. You know, should it be based on where the school is, where you're going to school or where you're living? A lot of complex issues there and a lot of advocacy coming from that group. And also on another real significant issue right now related to a VA policy that actually requires student veterans to repay GI Bill payments for withdrawals from classes. In a situation where a student wouldn't want to take a failing grade. So a lot of talk about that at these meetings. And so that's a really good one, a very interesting and important one. On that same day, at the Tierney Center for Veteran Services, there's going to be a Veteran Entrepreneurship Conference in the afternoon. The big focus will be HR 6527, sponsored by Katie Congressman Porter and Michelle Steele's office. Congresswoman Porter will be in attendance making a presentation, and a representative from Michelle Steele's office is my understanding. So that act is looking at making sure that veterans have the opportunity to be involved in contracting for some of the new transportation infrastructure, highways, et cetera. So that should be a great event also. And then finally, on the 30th, the Orange County Veterans and Military Families Collaborative will have a general meeting. That'll be at UCI, focused on employment and looking at the Orange County labor market. So that's all in March, you know, so really a ton of good stuff going on right now in Orange County. And that's it.
Thank you for that, Ben. We'll go ahead and move on to item 10, standing committees. I know Alex had to leave. Are there any reports from any standing committees? Any reports for any standing committees at this time?
Jenna, would it be possible to for you to share Ben Gale's information that he just presented to the rest of the committee?
You can provide my contact, but also, you know, if there's interest in those events, what I could do is try to send over an email to one person, perhaps with links that could be distributed out to the group. Would that work? Okay. Eric, to you.
That would be it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I'll do that. That sounds good. Yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I have nothing further.
All right. Thank you. We'll go ahead and go around the table for council comments, starting with Vice Chair Stephanie Wade.
I have nothing at this time.
Very good. All right, we'll move into Alexis Federico.
I have nothing, thank you.
Thank you, Alexis. Alexander Gonzalez.
Good afternoon, Chair. Thank you very much. Real briefly, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Strong Families, Strong Children. They're moving through a request through the Orange County Board of Supervisors for an additional $2 million to help fund the programs that they are supporting. As you know, they're a collaborative of five different organizations in Orange County, building strong, resilient families, especially through veterans and military families. So I wanted to shout out that great work they're doing and the support for this upcoming item that the supervisor will consider. So thank you.
Looking forward to seeing them next month. Will we have them on next month's agenda?
No, we shouldn't. We should be okay there, but
okay.
I'll touch base with you.
Very good. Thank you. Bobby McDonald.
Yeah, Alex, I want you to know that we supported it through the chamber and through the veterans thing for the Strong Families, Don't You? They're really great. We worked with them on a couple other programs in the community. So they're good people. So Lori and Mitzi and them. The other thing that I like to bring up, there is if you haven't had a chance to go to Heroes Hall and see the Right to Fight exhibit, you need to go by and see it. It's really spectacular. We had our opening for Black History Month and for the program a couple Saturdays ago. We had over 300 people. It was pretty impressive and pretty powerful. We had a member from the Mumford Point Marines, seeing how there's nothing but Marines on this council. You guys would love that. And the gentleman that I had speak that day was the first Master Chief, was Chief for helicopters over at MACAS, okay? So he was a helicopter crewman or whatever. He was one of the head guys in Orange County and there at the base. So that was pretty cool. But we had some others. But they've got some more speakers that are coming. But if you get a chance, you need to go over there. It's very, very neat. Plus also upstairs now, they've done some research and redid the parts for some of the other things that were here at the Heroes Hall. And that's all I have. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Looking ahead over there this weekend with my Marine to take a look at that. So thank you so much for that, Bob. Marcos, do you have anything for us?
Hey, thank you so much to our presenters today. Thanks, Alexander and Ben, for the extra community insight. I have nothing more to report at this time. And thank you to everyone.
Fantastic, Vladimir.
I have nothing. Thank you, sir.
Very good. All right. Thank you, everyone. Very productive meeting today. So looking forward to another one. Hope you all stay safe, stay healthy, continue to keep fighting for veterans. And again, you know, always asking yourself, have we helped a veteran today? With that, I will leave you to the rest of your day. Everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thank you.